The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
I'm not going to rag on the Cardinals. They've been good, so good for so long. They've never done a true rebuild. If this is their version of it, so be it. In this division, it doesn't mean it has to take 5 years to get back on top. I know fans aren't thrilled with it, but look at every other team, in big market or small. A lot of them go through full-on rebuilds, and the Cardinals haven't done that in the time I've covered baseball.
That is the voice of Jesse Rogers, ESPN baseball writer, and here in St. Louis covering opening day at Busch Stadium. That's right. This is a brand new best podcast in baseball where we talk about the National League Central, the Cardinals' direction, the duality of their roster, and much, much more, including how the division, through Jesse's eyes and his conversations with the Cubs, viewed John Mozeliak here on his final opening day in charge of baseball operations for the Cardinals. Get ready for all the festivities, but first, cue the music. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week here on opening day, a civic holiday in St. Louis, by Jesse Rogers, baseball writer at ESPN, and Jeff Passan's valet. Did I nail that?
You completely nailed it. Probably Passan's valet before baseball writer, to be honest. When we're in the playoffs together, I'm usually, I'm holding the umbrella. It's rainy on opening day today. I'm usually holding his umbrella.
And when he asks, you could also be caddy. Right, when he says, look, I need this quote from this guy so I can get out of the rough, you go and provide him.
I do all that for him, and I'm his pickleball partner. Ooh. During spring training or the playoffs when we're in the same city, and I will reveal to America he has a good backhand.
He has a good backhand. Oh, yeah. That's good.
But not much else.
Really? So, like, not a good forehand?
Not really. He's a backhand guy.
Sources say.
Yeah, exactly.
Jesse, you're here covering the Cardinals opener as they host the Twins. One of the rare openers at Busch Stadium. We're indoors because it's raining, because that's why they rarely have home openers this early. It's also the earliest ever the Cardinals have played a regular season game, if you can believe that. The earliest scheduled was back in 2020. Obviously, that didn't happen. So this will be the quickest they've got off to a season. What kind of start do you expect from these Cardinals? Are you as perplexed as most national folks when you look at this team?
It is a very unique situation, probably the most unique for you, Derek, who has covered the team for so long. They're open about it, which is good. It's nice to have some transparency. This handoff from Mozeliak to Chaim Bloom is very interesting and very rare in sports. Mm-hmm. It could be beneficial. You have a guy that's going to be here 2 years behind the scenes working on the future, basically, with the guy that's in front of the cameras still for one more season, setting things up for the next guy. And I think July will be very interesting for Mozeliak, his last big moment as the lead decision maker here. Of course, the Cardinals could surprise, as we get to your question. Nolan is still here. Ryan Helsley is still here. It's an interesting mix. Could they get off to a decent start? It's possible, but not probable, especially when you hear Ollie Marmol talk about giving runway to young players and how does that manifest itself. There might be some moments where he sticks with a young player instead of letting a veteran take this at bat or this out in the eighth inning or whatever the case may be. I'm not saying he's setting them up to lose games, but there's two priorities here, and really the main one is about the future more than 25. But players dictate things, and Wilson Contreras, I think, is going to have a big year at first base offensively. Mm-hmm. Nolan has worked hard to get back to who he was. Helsley's an all-world closer. It's not impossible for them to make some noise in the first half. I just don't know if they can sustain it through 4 months where they pull back on making some moves in July. So the likely outcome is still some major trades come July and that reset at the major league level that we really haven't seen yet.
And it's so fascinating that it's going to take almost like a collection of individuals, and you didn't mention the starters who are also part of this. You got Eric Fetty, Sonny Gray, Miles Michaelis, all veteran starters. You know, that you have all these individuals who, the better they play, the more the Cardinals will try to get for them in trade, and yet if they collectively play well, the harder decision it becomes for the Cardinals to get rid of them and go like, all right, well, we're trading for the future, but we still have to sell tickets in August of this year. Like, it was such an interesting, like, they're always stuck with, like, two sides of the same coin, and it just seems to spin. Like, they can't settle on one. So I'm really eager to see how that plays out, because you're right. I mean, Wilson looks like he's going to have a rock'em sock'em robot type of season. Just, I mean, he enjoyed spring training. He had a lot. He had a blast. I mean,
he's not crouching every day for nine innings. Right. He feels good.
Yeah, I would like to see his DH numbers over his career. It's not that many at-bats, but I think they're pretty darn good,
yeah.
Meaning the days he doesn't catch. But all this is fascinating, and you and I have been around long enough. We've seen this act before. I go back to 1997. The White Sox famously did a white flag trade. They were three games out of first place at the deadline. Don't quote me on that, but they were right there. But they were.
I mean, it's a podcast. I have no choice but to quote you.
Right, right. They were a 500 team though.
Yeah.
And the decision by Ron Shuler was let's trade them away. And the Cubs went through this a couple years ago. Remember, they held on to Cody Bellinger because right before the deadline, they went on a win streak. And I've talked to Dave Dombrowski about this when he was with the Red Sox. Like, timing is everything. And you can't push back against some of those forces because fans will lose their minds. If you're doing well in July, you just can't trade away. So the worst-case scenario for Mozeliak, and Chaim Bloom will have a say, I'm sure, is to be 4 or 5 games out of a wild card spot in July or the division, and you've got to make this tough decision. I think their default, you tell me, you're closer to it, their default strategy is to move on from guys. I mean, Ryan Helsley, if he has the same kind of year, can fetch you a lot. Closers can get you a lot at the July trade deadline. So that's the first guy I look at.
Yeah, and then probably Eric Fetty. Then we'll see what the other starters are going. You're exactly right. I don't know. Like that, your answer is like, what will they do? I don't know. I find one thing I really was interested in spring was this notion of, like, all winter long the front office said this is the direction the team is going. And the moment spring training started, and now especially that the regular season is about to start, it's in the players' hands. Like, yeah. they quite literally get to dictate what direction this goes. And yet the front office at any point in time could say, man, Nolan is really going good. We got the offer we want, Nolan, you want out? And the Cardinals could be 8 games up.
Yeah.
And this is a situation that it kind of reminds me of the Marlins with Luis Arraez. It wouldn't shock me if somebody lost, a contender lost a third baseman in May, they right. call the Cardinals, or a starting pitcher in late April, and they call the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals, kind of like the White Sox last year, opened from business from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I think the default strategy is still to move on from some of these guys, but the players do dictate it. It's going to be interesting. They might get off to a decent start. I just don't know if they can sustain it for 4 months when they talk about runway for guys and some moments where there will probably be some failures where in other situations they would probably go to a veteran to succeed or get them over the hump.
I just wonder if the bias is going to be, nah, this is misleading. Like, no matter what the record is, the bias is going to be, no, we're for the future.
Well, I executives have different ways of looking at it. Most of them, come July, are thinking about, are we good enough to make the World Series or win the World Series if we keep everybody? Other guys, especially in the 3 wild card era, start thinking a little different, though. Okay, can we just sneak in? Look what the Diamondbacks did a couple years ago.
Right.
If you are healthy in October, anybody can get there. So the dynamic has changed, but my guess is Mozeliak will take that. Can we really go far in October, even if we're on the fringes of the playoff race right now? I'm leaving anyway. I got to make the right decision for the future. And if people want to rag on me in the moment, that's fine. But I think that, again, their default strategy is that.
Yeah.
The finger's on the scale for the future, you know, and they don't need much to push them off the ledge. I've described them as a, you know, they've been always, like, on the fence. Like, whether or not it was a few years ago they trade for Goldschmidt or they trade for Nolan Arenado, but they don't make that one next move for that star pitcher, right? So they're always kind of pitching light, and the farm system didn't provide. So they always kind of kept one step shy of going all in, for lack of a better description. This is the other direction.
Yeah.
They're in the middle, and they're one step shy of going all out. They just started leaning to the other side of the fence.
It really did surprise me as they started spring training that all those veterans were still there. Now, I don't know, half of them have no trade clauses, which right. you talk to, and the fans, you got to understand, like, that's one way to bring players here. It's one way to keep players here. You've got to give them a little carrot.
Great point.
I talk to executives all the time, especially small markets. Look, we can't give you the extra $10 million, but we'll give you a little more control over your future. And a lot of no-trade clauses come back to haunt a team, and that's certainly happening right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any chance Sonny Gray would be on this team if he didn't have a no-trade clause.
Oh, no, they would have been. They would have moved in.
And Wilson Contreras probably.
Yeah, they thought they could find a really good market for both of those guys.
Yeah. So it is what it is. I'm not going to rag on the Cardinals. They've been so good for so long. They've never done a true rebuild. If this is their version of it, so be it. In this division, it doesn't mean it has to take 5 years to get back on top. So I know fans aren't thrilled with it, but look at every other team, in big market or small. A lot of them go through full-on rebuilds, and the Cardinals haven't done that in the time I've covered baseball.
What's the perception outside of St. Louis of the Cardinals? I mean, they didn't do any moves until signing Phil Maton late in spring training. They were the last team to make a major league acquisition of any type, trade or free agent signing. Did you get a lot of, like, what is going on there when you kind of talk to folks?
You know, it's interesting. It's a little bit of, I don't know if the word's apathy, but they've faded in the background a little bit. They would have made headlines if they had traded Nolan. And so they've just kind of faded in the background a little bit. But within the industry, I think people understand what I just said before, that almost every medium to small market team goes through a little bit of a reset. You just can't keep going. And that's what Mo's been selling, I know, to the media. So I think everyone kind of in the industry understands that they're having that reset. I did get a couple people asking me, other executives, when are the Cardinals going to start a little bit of a fire sale? Because you can't do that reset if you're just going to hold on to veterans. So I didn't quite have that answer, especially after
not in a day.
Yeah, but again, when how many guys have no trades? Other than, you know, the key players, at least three or four, right?
Right.
So their hands are a little bit tied in some respect. But yeah, I think that's kind of it. They're kind of in the background at the moment, but come July, they're going to be a very interesting team.
The four no trade clauses are Nolan Arenado, Sonny Gray, Miles Michaelis, and then Wilson Contreras. So those guys had the four no trade clause. Sonny Gray and Wilson were pretty quick to say that they wanted to stick around. They had different reasons for doing that. Wilson said he wanted to stick around, and the Cardinals said okay, but contingent on that is you're going to move positions, left field or first base. Which do you want to play and which do you want to focus on? Miles Michaelis wouldn't have waived his no trade clause. He's got the ties to Jupiter. He's likely to hear. But he also wasn't approached. Nolan was the only one who said go ahead, see what's out there.
Right.
But he kept a really limited list and never asked for a trade and definitely never forced one. Ownership said that. They said, they said Nolan never once said, I don't want to be here. It's just, can we find somewhere better for him?
And the other thing is, add another layer to it, walk years, right? Ryan Helsley's walk year, Michaelis's walk year, you know.
Steven Matz, Eric Fetty.
Yeah, exactly. I was talking to Fetty today about his situation. And, so there's so many layers to the Cardinals. It's different for you, a beat guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different vibe. I think most beat guys have gone through what you're about to go through.
Yeah.
You know, you've always been covering a team pushing for October, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Except for basically this year. I think last year they thought maybe one last shot with Goldschmidt and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really the first time this franchise has gone through exactly this moment in a long time.
Yeah, I think this is my 21st consecutive opening day covering the Cardinals, and whatever 22nd year on the beat. And I have talked to, like, folks, both baseball writers but also like managers, coaches, and some players either around the Cardinals or former players with the Cardinals or outside the Cardinals about like what if for this many years you've held them to the brand which is, did you win a pennant? Did you get to the World Series? Like, bottom line, like, what did you do today that got you closer to the National League pennant? That's kind of always been my framework, is like, even in December or in spring training or in those dog days of August, what did you do today that got the Cardinals closer to their brand that they sell to the team, which is winning the NL pennant? I don't know. Do you change? Do I change the question? Do I change, like, kind of the lens to look through this season?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great.
Is it one long spring training?
Right. It's a great, great point. I think the lens is actually July. The momentum is towards July. The other option is they surprise everyone. That's a great storyline too. So you really do have two good storylines. It's either going to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. And more than likely, it is the momentum towards July and who's interested in these guys. And if somehow they do an early trade, like Luis Rice was moved, if there's some injuries. So that's the lens, which is, again, different for you.
Yeah,
it's different.
You've been in this division and covered Chicago baseball for a long time and seen this division. Interesting to you to see promotion of Major League Baseball and not see the Cardinals? You know, they've done some things. ESPN has done, obviously, the Cardinals are going to be on Sunday Night Baseball right off the hop at Fenway Park. But the Cardinals aren't going to be on Sunday Night Baseball as often as they usually are. In the promotional material, you know, absent from the photos are Cardinal players. Does that kind of catch your eye a little bit?
Well, now that you tell me it does, I'm not.
What does that say about where they are?
On the Cardinals and the marketing of the country, around the country.
Yeah.
But I am up on the Cardinals within the division. And that's what I say about fade in the background.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
I've never covered the Chicago scene without the Cardinals being the forefront of the baseball world, honestly, in the division.
Yeah.
And it's weird to say it's the Brewers, Reds, and Cubs for the division. That's weird. It is. Mm-hmm. So I guess extend that nationally. And, yeah, I mean, the Cardinals are a brand. They really are. I mean, there's probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 brands in the MLB, right? And the Cardinals are one of them. You know, Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers,
the royalty.
Cubs. Yeah. And the Cardinals are one of them. So that when you say it that way, is surprising. But more surprising is just for a couple years now, I haven't considered them as a division winner. You know, or a potential division winner.
Isn't that wild to think about? That, like, they just, like, I like the way you've said that. They've faded. They've lacked relevance.
Yeah.
Which is almost the worst thing in all, right?
I grew up a Cub fan, so I've been around this division and the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry forever. And I really, in my mind, can't remember a moment where they weren't a bother to the Cub fans, you know? And this is the moment. And that's why, one reason, I go on the radio in Chicago all the time. I'm like, boy, this is your moment, Cubs, right?
Yeah.
You don't have the big bad Cardinals to worry about. It's the Brewers who don't spend money. And now maybe the Reds a little bit with Francona. But this is the doors open where one major player in this division is taking a seat in the back of the bus for a moment at least. And still the Cubs haven't made the playoffs. So I know Cub fans are frustrated over that.
This is why you're so good, because that is an expert segue to what we'll talk about, the division. Mm-hmm. And I will just start here with the Cubs. They're the biggest, baddest market in the smallest, meekest division.
Yeah.
So, and they don't do much. Their payroll is smaller than last year. They don't have Kyle Tucker to an extension yet. They make that big trade. They give up to get Kyle Tucker, a guy who's now a rock star making the team in Houston.
Yeah.
So I'll just start here. Cubs, what gives, Jesse Rogers?
A lot of pressure. Tons of pressure on that team this season. They're front office executive Jed Hoyer has been there for 14 years, and he does not have a contract extension. This is his last year, and I think the winner was indicative of that. He pushed hard. That trade for Kyle Tucker is not one he normally would make. That's a lot of years of team control for potentially 1 year, but he knew he could be a difference maker. You mentioned that their payroll's down. It's such a weird double-edged thing going on. Their payroll's down, but still higher than anyone else in the division by a good margin.
Right.
You know, $100 million higher than the team that beat them by 10 games last year and won the division. So there's just that dual thing. They didn't spend on Bregman, but they still have enough to win the division. It's kind of what ownership is thinking. $200 million or more is enough in that division. Don't worry about the Dodgers. I'm speaking from an ownership perspective. Don't worry about the Mets. Worry about the Brewers. So it's real interesting to see this play out. A lot of pressure on the players. Dansby Swanson had a bad year last year. He's the face of that team along with a couple other guys. So there's pressure. About Craig Counsell under pressure. Everyone thought, okay, here he is. Squeezed more out of less in Milwaukee. Well, last year he squeezed less out of more in Chicago with a huge pay salary for him and just didn't go well. Mm-hmm. And so is he going to squeeze a little bit more out of this team? All these questions are hovering around the Cubs. And I would say going into spring training and during spring training, I was buying in. I think the lineup is going to be very good because Pico Armstrong is something special. And their catcher, Miguel Amaya, has emerged. So it's a very lengthy 1-9 lineup. But by the end of spring training, I was kind of back on the Brewers bandwagon. We forget, William Contreras, top five MVP.
Yeah, great player.
Jackson Curiel is just coming into his own, third and rookie of the year. Christian Yelich is healthy. Sal Frela can, I mean, it's defense, it's speed. They led this all-spring teams in stolen bases. They were fourth in home runs. What that means, I don't know. But what it means actually to me is we always underestimate the Brewers, and somehow, some way, they do something that surprises you on the stat page and in the standings. So, anyway, long story short, a lot of pressure on the Cubs, and probably not a lot on Milwaukee. And it feels
again,
like it's that way every year. They take advantage of it.
They just keep going. But no Devin Williams. And if you look at one of the factors that the Brewers have had, whether they've struggled with offense, which they did for a while, or they've had some injuries to their starting rotation, they have always had a Josh Hader to hold down an inning or a Devin Williams to hold even the slimmest of leads. You know, as we talk here, and because of the rain, we're now in apparently the workout room. Without Devin Williams, that changes that team, right?
If you watched the first half last year when Williams was hurt,
right.
Trevor Megill was really good. Milwaukee is like one of those teams that helps pitchers out, and Megill was hitting three digits on the radar gun, if I remember it correctly, early in that season. I think he had his little apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. Williams came back, kind of blew the playoffs for them, and now Megill has been elevated. But this is, look, it was Hader to Williams to Megill. Like, I'm done doubting the Brewers. And I know Adames isn't there, but Joey Ortiz, who they got in the Burns trade, moves over to shortstop. I just think that we have to give them the benefit of the doubt until further notice. So, yeah, Williams is a loss. So is Adames. So is Hader. Let's go through the list. But they keep on overcoming, and I think Megill's going to be good.
Fascinating. And then the other side of the division, you have one of the best young group of pitchers and arguably the best second-year pitcher in a long time, and Paul Skeens there in Pittsburgh. Then you might have the best collection of young talent with the sage veteran Terry Francona taking over a manager in Cincinnati. How do you look at those two teams?
Yeah, I went to Pirates camp for the first time, and luckily I saw Skeens in the bullpen, so where you can walk up really close and watch, and it was just so cool. I'm like picturing myself
in, like, a young Roger Clemens.
Right. I'm picturing myself in 20 years when he's at the Hall of Fame. Now, that's a huge leap, but whatever. Having seen him in his second year just working it, and I don't know, you've been around, the catcher's glove sounds different when guys like Skeens are throwing. Maybe I'm romanticizing it too much. Like everyone in baseball, I wish, you know, they put some hitters around him. Like, is he going to go the way of Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon and all
this?
Yeah, and that's sad.
Was that rhetorical? No, yeah. I mean, yes, it is.
It is. But that doesn't mean that the days Jared Jones and Skeens and maybe even Keller Pitch are going to be tough out. So, and Pirates have had good months in the last couple years. They just can't sustain it for six. And I think it'll be a similar situation. So you don't want to be facing Skeens if you can avoid them in a series. So they are what they are. They can pitch, they can't hit. It's kind of what we thought of last year. But maybe the pitching is even better because now Skeens is going to be unleashed. I sat with Francona for a long time, man. He still has it. He still has that. What's that it thing? You know it when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going to elevate them. I still wonder about their offense. I think they have a good rotation. It's deep. It's
sneaky good.
If it's healthy, it's deep. I still wonder about their offense. But, you know, take McClain or Steer in a moment and Elliott. Like, the parts are better than the sum. The sum has to be good and healthy. And maybe that's where Francona comes in. But you're right, they're intriguing. I don't understand the projection systems that have the Reds in the low 70s. I don't get that. Francona alone should elevate them. So, look, I think it'll be bunched early, and then you'll see the separation probably with Milwaukee and the Cubs and maybe with Cincinnati. That's my guess within the division. But, man, I still think we got to give Milwaukee credit. 10 games up last year. Felt like they could have won by 20 the way they were playing. But yeah, I think it'll be bunched early up with each team having its strength, like we talked about with Pittsburgh and the young players in Cincinnati. But ultimately, I think two or three of those teams will pull away.
I picked the Reds to win it. Yeah, I mean, mine as well. I mean, they had the most – I thought they were probably the most talented team last year, not always the most healthy or healthiest team, not always, like, playing to their peak.
Yeah.
But you see them when they're really good, and they were really good. It just was like, can you do that for – instead of doing it for 21 days, can you do that for 42 days?
This is the way I'd break it down. I think Milwaukee has the best bullpen, best defense, and the most speed. I think the Cubs have the best lineup 1 through 9. I think the Reds are the most well-rounded at their peak. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a deep rotation. They signed a closer. They have a young, I mean, stud in Ellie De La Cruz, who could be the best player in the division at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But don't overlook the Cubs' offense. Pete Armstrong is something special. Kyle Tucker is going to elevate them.
He's really good.
So 1 through 9, I still think that's the best offense. But it's going to be tight. It's going to be close.
So how do the Cardinals get through that? Let's say, what scenario has the Cardinals elbowing those teams aside? What has to happen?
Oh, God. I mean, Nolan has to be Nolan again. Jordan Walker, I mean, what a physical specimen. In fact, kind of reminds me a little bit of Cam Smith, the young prospect with the Astros. But Walker, I think, is even bigger. But these are great baseball bodies these guys have. So Jordan Walker living up to expectation. Nolan getting back to who he is. And then you could really rest. I mean, Sonny Gray, Michaelis, Matt. I mean, these are veteran starters. We could really start with there. Forget about Libertor for a moment. We really start with those four veterans. If they're taking the ball every, I guess, what is it now, 6 days with the Cardinals? What is it going to be?
Well, the way that it's going to work, I'm glad you asked. So they have a 6-man rotation, but it's going to be a 5-man rotation, traditional rotation, until mid-April.
Okay.
So it's not going to open up a 6-man rotation. April's because of off days.
Yeah.
They have every Thursday off until the end. So April 16th is when Matz is set to start. Everything will be geared up. His whole appearances will be kind of reverse engineered from there to keep him sharp to start that day, with Kyle Leahy being the long reliever to kind of cover up the innings necessary. So that's what they're thinking.
Yeah, I think you have to have some of those offensive things happen, like Nolan and I said. But if you really want to see them get off to a good start, those four veteran, you know, pitchers. Michaelis can't be giving up more hits than innings pitch. You know, Sonny Gray's got to get some velocity. Like, it's a lot of ifs, but they've all done it in the past. So if somehow they can do it through the first month, that's the formula. That's assuming Nolan looks more like Nolan and Jordan looks more like his best version of himself, because the offense was so putrid at times last year.
Oh, so it was meek. I mean, it was pedestrian. With runners in scoring position, their average as a team last year was the lowest that it had ever been for a Cardinals team since runners in scoring position was a stat that was tracked. The slugging percentage, which is where things happen in the modern game and has always, but the slugging percentage was the fourth lowest. And you're talking about 50 years of runners in scoring position numbers.
And remember, we're basically just two years removed from all those things being reversed.
Right.
They were growing. Goldschmidt and Arenado were finishing first and third in MVP. They were doing all those
things. Pujols was here.
Were doing all those things. I mean, I remember doing a story on Yepes as the next great, great Cardinals. So things have taken a turn.
Yeah. Toward Washington for him. You know, it's interesting just the duality, that's the best word that I try to come up with. Maybe there's another one. But the Cardinals have this, like, odd duality of their roster, right?
Yes.
For the first time since 2007, they do not have a rookie-eligible player on their opening day roster. And this was supposed to be a youth movement.
Yeah,
right?
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
So it's supposed to be a reset. And for the first time in 30 years, at least 30 years, this great reset begins with more than 24 players returning. So it's like, well, which are you?
Well,
are you just a carbon copy of last year? Because, you know, if you have a youth movement, but then you bring everybody back, by definition, because you can't stop time, everybody's a year older. So it's not you're getting younger.
Two things. One, that's the exact reason I'm here on opening day in advance of the Sunday night game next week, because of what you just said. Number two,
I just gave you material.
I'm going to try to say from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, because I did not know that they didn't have a rookie-eligible player, but it's part of the storyline that I'm focusing on here. When is that reset going to take place? Mm-hmm. Most likely in July, but I thought it was going to happen this winter in a very public way. They were trying to trade Nolan and Wilson, possibly, and Sonny, and none of it happened. So I that's why I'm here, because it is a weird duality that's going on that will play itself out. It's a fine line, though. They could hit home runs if it all happens in July, but if they're stuck with players, if they're bad first halves and they're walked for nothing, now what'd you do? What'd you get? So now where are you? All those questions are going to emerge. And so, yeah, I think that's why it's a fascinating season for the Cardinals.
And then on the other side, you have a team that, if it were contending, would put Liberatore in the bullpen because of what he did there and because the need to lock it down and just the allure of a lefty who throws 98 when you have other alternatives as a starter. And you probably don't have Victor Scott in center field if you're a team that's trying out to win. But yet, here are the Cardinals. They got Liberatore in the rotation, and Victor Scott earned his spot in center field. And it's almost like that's going to be the big test, is how long does he get to play?
Yeah, and I will give the Cardinals credit. They've been very transparent about all this. Even Ollie Marmol's talked about, okay, you guys, me and the media, are going to need to come to me daily about what we're doing here, you know, because, and I asked him.
That's just,
it's weird. It's unusual.
The whole time I just, like, for 20 plus years, why didn't you win?
Right.
What did you do to win today? And now it'd be like, well, why? Can you take me through the nuances of this loss?
Right.
Like, what kind of question is
that? Why'd you leave Liberatore in there with two outs in the seventh instead of pulling him?
Right.
Because we wanted to see, you know, if he could get through a tough moment. However it's going to manifest itself is going to be unusual. The other option was just to rip the Band-Aid off. The problem was those no-trade clauses.
And also the fans. I mean, look, they got to sell tickets.
Yeah.
They do have to sell tickets. Yeah. And that's a real concern, because they took such a hit on the TV, and they're expecting to take a real hit on ticket revenue. They got to find a way to energize a fan base that, you talk about how they've receded, and they aren't really relevant in the division. There's a real concern about apathy setting in with Cardinal Nation, because there is something worse than an angry fan base.
Yeah.
It's a apathetic fan base.
You almost have to work that into your equation. Whether it's a reset or rebuild, you're not going to sell as many tickets.
Right.
You're not going to sell as many tickets. I mean, you can have the illusion of this or that, but once you go south in the standings, you're not going to sell as many tickets. You need to build that in. But look, I get it. You can't go from 3 million to 2 million. You can go from 3 to 2.7. Maybe you can live with that. So you're not wrong. But you can't think of those things in front of what the future of this organization is going to look like, because ultimately that's the most important thing. So we'll see. I actually think they could get off to a decent start. I just don't know, going back to our original thought, if it can last.
All right, well, I want to close with this subject, because you're well positioned to answer it, and you brought it up. That Jed Hoyer there with the Cubs for 14 years. It's a long run.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of it was with Theo Epstein there as well. And you mentioned that Kyle Tucker's not a trade that he would usually make, that much control for 1 year. That is a trade that Mozeliak made multiple times, or attempted to make multiple times, where he would give up control, get a guy for a year, sell him on the Cardinals, and then they had this as a business model while Jocketty did it before him and everything. What is the perception out there of John Mozeliak as a president of baseball operations? When you're around talking to other teams, just your perception from Chicago, you know, long run of winning records, championships early, four consecutive NLCS appearances early. Some of that tied, though, to Albert Pujols' time.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it tied to Yadier Molina's time here, both of whom he had a hand in drafting.
Yeah.
So what's been the perception, especially through kind of that Chicago Cubs lens?
Well, that's the lens I can give you, because I think there's been an admiration, to be honest. Forget about the last couple years, really. But going back to what you just said, they trade for Goldschmidt and then sign him. They pull off a trade for Arenado. By the way, the Cubs were close to trading for Arenado.
Yeah, they tried.
For Arenado was a real thing. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic hit. So there's some admiration there. Can you name me the last Cub homegrown or player they traded for that they signed up in a big way? Not really. I mean, they signed Hendricks to one contract after Rizzo, Baez. Now, maybe there was good decisions in the end.
Rizzo's the last guy, right? A trade, and then they signed forever.
Yeah, I mean, in the 13 they did that, or 14. Yeah. So there's some admiration that the Cardinals have been able to sell themselves. I wonder if the Cubs being in a big market gets in their own way. In other words, you acquire this player, now he sees Steve Cohn dollar signs. I'm in Chicago. I deserve max money. I know Boris thought that with Chris Bryant back in the day, $300 million plus. Cubs aren't acting that way, though. They're not run by a Steve Cohn or an L.A. Dodger machine. So where I think if you're a Cardinal, you kind of know you're going to get maybe a good deal, but you may not get the max that another big market team can do. So it's almost like that's built into the formula as well. I'm sort of rambling here, but I think there's been an admiration for what he's done for so long and really not having to strip it down and lose 100 games 3 years in a row. That's my take.
Is, in a way, did Theo leave at the right time? Because then, whereas Mo stayed kind of through this, that might be the contrast of where they stand with their reputation. I mean, Mo was just in the dugout talking to us, and he joked about how during the intro he's going to get booed, and he has a response for it that I'm leaving. This time I'm really gone. You got rid of me. I mean, he couldn't imagine Theo going through that with the Cubs. So it's just a matter of the timing.
It's a great point. It really is. I mean, Theo really subscribes to the Bill Walsh stay at a place for 10 years and then move on. Basically did in Boston, did in Chicago. How long is it for Mo?
30 with the organization, 17 leading. This will be 18 leading the baseball.
My point being, when you're in it for that long, it's actually admirable that he hasn't had to cycle through several times of we hate this guy. Really, it's been more recent. Theo understood, that we're breaking up this 16 championship team, and they didn't really have a plan to reset quickly. They had to rip off the Band-Aid and basically rebuild again. And that's what they've done. So, I think Theo did get out at the right time. But that doesn't mean most stayed too long. It's just that their strategic way of going about business has now changed. And that's when he's getting out.
That's Jesse Rogers, baseball writer at ESPN, and Jeff Passan's valet.
Yes.
But also just a longtime great baseball writer here in the Central Time Zone. So, you know, I have a fondness for you just because it's nice to have somebody in this area. You know,
absolutely. I love coming to St. Louis. Love seeing you at spring training. We have a good time, especially when Gordon Whitmire is around.
Yeah, Gordon Whitmire makes everything
he's
better.
He's glued to everything. Yeah. But it'll be an interesting season. You know, we're not on the coast. And so I get it. Those are the marquee teams. But it's still a fun division to be around.
I wrote a little bit about this notion that the Stars are gravitating towards the coast.
Yeah.
Do you have some concerns about that? I mean, I talked to David Stearns, obviously ran Milwaukee, and I know I'm keeping you here a little longer with this topic, but like he goes, well, small market teams have an advantage over big market teams because they don't make the mistakes that we do. I'm like, well, they would love to. They would love to make some of those contracts. And he said, no, like roster flexibility, like that makes them nimble. They can move from team. And I said, but then they don't have a player to sell. And like I brought this up to him. I'm like, what you're describing is, hey, fans, we're going to go through roster churn. Don't get attached to anyone. You get attached to winning, but don't get attached to anybody. I'm like, that's no way to sell the product. And he agreed. And he was like, yeah, that's the problem with it. So now all of a sudden, these mid-market, where we cover, we've spent a lot of time in this time zone, spent a lot of time in the central divisions of both leagues. What we will be covering then is the feeder teams for the other clubs. How does that sit with you?
Well, we talked about that. The Pirates are already that team.
They already are.
So
now
I think
be like 10 Pirates.
I think Rob Manfred would say that the league and teams and divisions go have always gone through cycles. Like, he's not wrong about one thing. Like, we thought the Steinbrenner Yankees were going to ruin baseball, and we recovered from that.
Tell me the last small market team to win a World Series.
It's been 10 years, the Royals.
The Royals, yeah.
And so, and you know what's happened in that 10-year time? Fewer and fewer of the bottom 15 teams are making the playoffs. And so that means, like, just the pure math of it is the fact that, like, you have these fewer teams. Chip Carey and I talked about this on a recent podcast. You just start reducing the number of entry points for the small market teams, and now all of a sudden they have less incentive than ever to sign free agents, let alone keep their stars.
And it is why the smaller market good decision makers are difference makers. You draft the right guy, you have a better chance of signing him up, like the Royals did with Bobby Witt.
Great point.
But I agree with you. Like, every team, it should be like the NFL or NBA. Like, San Antonio has a couple stars now, right? Whether they drafted or signed, like, and I'm not advocating a salary cap or not advocating a salary cap. I'm advocating for every team to be able to have a star or two, whether that be with better ownership or a better economic system, because that's the true parity in the league. When every team has a couple stars that everyone knows are he's a Cardinal for life, probably, or whatever. And it's unfortunate that we're not in that moment in time in the Central Divisions.
I'm really intrigued with where this season takes you. Like, is there a team that emerges in this region, in this not just time zone, but in this region, that then captures the imagination, not just of the local fans, but becomes something of a sensation? Cleveland really had it in them a few times to do it. Mm-hmm. Bobby Witt Jr. has it in him, especially if he starts taking on the Titans on the coast for the MVP award. I'm just really eager to see if there's a team that does that.
That's why I really wanted to see Alex Bregman sign with the Tigers. I wanted that to happen.
Scooble.
I talked to a GM about the Tigers job, and he said it was the best job in baseball. I'm like, what? He goes, it's a sleeping giant. It's a baseball town. Mm-hmm. That owner, at least by name, will spend. The dad did. We'll see if the son does, but it sounds like he's willing to. And they have a young, good decision maker in Scott Harris there. If Bregman had signed, it would have brought a little cachet to the Midwest, to these divisions we're talking about. And so that might be the team. I think they're baseball crazy in Detroit. It's up and coming. I loved what Scooble did. He sent out a message. Did you see that?
Yeah.
On Instagram.
Really cool.
Detroit, we've arrived, whatever. They're not quite there yet, but they can pitch, that's for sure. And they have a couple budding stars potentially in Riley Green. We'll see. So that's a team that could emerge.
All right, we'll try this again. That is Jesse Rogers, ESPN baseball writer, Jeff Passan's right-hand man, and here covering opening day at Busch Stadium. It's great to have you here. We're off on the Cardinals' 134th season in the National League, their 20th season here at the downtown ballpark that we have kind of been dodging through traffic to do this podcast. And it's the earliest they've ever played, as I mentioned, but it's also, you know, it's an unusual opening day, but it also has something that they rarely do, which maybe Cardinal fans can take heart in, Jesse, and that's the fact that everybody starts today, as we are talking, tied for first place, except for the Cubs. It's the best possible position for the Cardinals.
I went up to Daniel Descalzo, who I've known forever. I said, look, you're already two up on the loss column on the Cubs. You're on your way, and he laughed at that. Yes, it's the one time of the year you can
say. Everybody's tied for first place except for the Cubs.
It's a good feeling for Cardinal fans.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesse.
You got it, Derek. Anytime.
Special thanks to Jesse Rogers of ESPN for joining the best podcast in baseball on a busy opening day in St. Louis. As you probably heard in the background, there was a lot going on as all of us were kind of looking for cover as a rainstorm moved in to delay opening day and the Clydesdales and the Red Jackets and all the pomp and circumstance. So that's the bad news. The good news is you've had a podcast to keep you company through it all. You can find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcasts. It includes iTunes and Spotify. Please rate and review the podcast there. Even better yet, please write a review of the podcast so we know what we're getting right and also what we can do better. The best podcast in baseball is in its 13th season, and that's only possible because of the community of listeners out there in the St. Louis area, throughout the country, and even abroad. We got some listeners in Australia. I can see them. They pop up there. People download the podcast in Canada. In Ireland, I believe we have one listener there in Ireland. So thank you to the listener in Ireland for the best podcast for tuning into the best podcast in baseball. You can find all of Jesse's work at ESPN, especially as he works to advance the Cardinals' appearance on Sunday Night Baseball there from Fenway Park in Boston. Of course, the Post-Dispatch will be there with all of the coverage in its pages and on stltoday.com, where you can also find the best podcast in baseball. It's brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Thank you all for listening. Off to opening day, eventually, and all the season ahead. Here we go.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.